Welcome aboard the Ark. You're listening to The 100 Podcast, a show about CW's sci-fi series, The 100. I'm Dan, your mountain man, and today I'm joined by my favorite grounder, Olga.
Hey, everybody. Today we're discussing Season 5, Episode 4, entitled Pandora's Box.
And I want to start out just by quickly saying, sorry we're late again this week. As you might have seen on Twitter, and if you're a longtime listener of the podcast, you know that Olga and I both struggle with anxiety and depression. That can sometimes make it hard to stay on schedule. And, you know, it's hard to always be chipper enough to do a podcast, guys. So we're sorry about that. We're going to try to stay on the Thursday schedule, but life gets in the way sometimes. But I just want to throw that out there so that people know we're not just shirking our duties over here.
Yes, we are dedicated podcasters. But
now let's get into our normal beginnings. Title fight.
This gets worse and worse the way we transition to this every week.
Yes.
All right.
So Pandora's Box. So we got a little explanation here from the 100 Wiki. I mean, I think we both and most people probably know the myth to a certain degree of Pandora's Box. Mm-hmm. But just to succinctly put it, you want to read it?
Right. Okay. So Pandora's Box is an object from Greek mythology given to Pandora, the first woman, as a gift, which she was never to open. Out of curiosity, she ends up opening it, releasing the contents of war, pain, suffering, disease, and every other bad thing into the world. When she finally closes the box, hope is the last thing remaining. This could say that humanity never got hope, or that it is the last thing humanity has left.
The only fight against, the only weapon against disease and war and all that.
And annihilation.
Yes. Now, I do want to throw out there that disease is particularly interesting given the whole, like, we need to cure something going on in the show.
Need a doctor.
So Pandora's Box, the most obvious reading I have is obviously the bunker being opened. Mm-hmm. And then that leading to war and everything. And maybe Octavia is also, like, the embodiment of all these, you know, dark pieces of humanity, at least at the moment. Mm-hmm. And then the last two people out of the bunker are Cain and Abby. And so in my reading of it, it's like them together are the hope because they're the last. Everybody's going up in twos.
Right.
And to me, it's like throughout this episode, Cain is pretty clearly like the hope. He wants to do things better.
He's talking to Octavia about how the way they're doing things, it's kind of she's taking the hope away from people. He's advocating for mercy and things like this. And arguably, like, what is hope without mercy sometimes. Mm-hmm. I could see how Cain is almost like Abby's hope.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, I feel like he embodies it more than she does.
So my only thought process with Abby is that maybe she's the hope of the cure. Right? So she's like kind of, in some ways, she's Dioza. I keep wanting to say Dionysa. I don't know why.
Well, Greek.
Yeah.
Dioza.
She's Dionysa.
Dioza's hope. Oh my
she's
God.
She's Dioza's hope.
I have another potential reading for opening Pandora's box.
Yes.
Is that once they open all the cryopods of they could also kind of be manifesting, like, they might be the ones who are diseased. Not might. I think they are the ones who are especially, like, diseased prisoners or, like, they are criminals and they embody all these bad things. So they're kind of opening that up of a full army as well.
Well, so getting into that, we had a tweet from at Maggie Jollier. I think that's...
Let's go with it.
Yeah. Basically, they asked similar things, that the pod could be the box, too, and pointed out there are many interpretations of the myth. They say there is an interpretation of the myth that the box was closed before hope could come out, and another says that hope is the biggest evil. Maybe we just haven't seen hope yet. Maybe the possibility of cryo is hope.
Like
the greater idea going forward.
Oh, yeah. I see it. Right. That is a big thing of Earth is screwed.
Yeah.
And
the cryopods are left behind as the evil comes out of it.
Right. Yeah. And people can are survivors of this season may use those.
Yeah. So that's interesting too.
Right. I like that.
It's interesting how sometimes I'm like, are we reading into it more than they even intended? You know,
maybe, but hey, if it fits, it fits.
Yep. Okay. All right. So what was your overall thoughts about the episode?
I like this episode a lot.
Yeah.
It definitely felt like we were kind of retreading some footsteps in some ways.
Like what?
Mostly Octavia and Bellamy, mm-hmm. I feel like.
Oh, yeah. Particularly the ending line.
Yeah.
There,
yeah. And the reason that's sticking in my mind, it's literally, like you said, the last thing we see, it's the ending. Yeah.
And we just rewalk the episode.
That too. Yeah. I mean, I realize that at the first watch as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But that said, I mean, it's really nice to have these reunions mm-hmm. and relationships. I really think that Kane and Abby are like the stars of this mm-hmm. episode, and that it was probably some of their best performances on the show. So I really enjoyed watching that.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you that it was some of their best performances. I'll get into it in more detail when we go through the recap, but mm-hmm. I still feel a little bit distanced from all that stuff. I can like objectively see that their performances are great and that the writing is pretty good, but I still have so much sort of disdain.
Apathy?
Disdain is a hard word.
Apathy?
For Abby particularly.
Oh, okay.
It's more than apathy. Mm. Yeah. I still have so much like residual annoyance with her.
Resentment.
Yeah. That it's hard for me to fully be in those scenes.
Interesting.
But again, I can like admit that that's a personal thing rather than like the show not being good necessarily.
What about the overall episode then?
Overall, I thought the episode was really good. I think that we got a lot of great character moments. We got a lot of development. I'm glad that by the end of this, we got like, okay, we're officially at war. We're getting into like the real drama mm-hmm. of the season. You know, it's not like we spent a lot of time setting things up. Now we can get into things more directly of what's the season about.
Yeah.
We got some more hints at like greater mysteries with both the disease and the allegiateships and, mm-hmm. you know, all that stuff. I thought it was definitely good. I think I like it even more than when I talked about it on my first watch on youtube.com/doingokay. Nice little plug there. We always do first reactions over there. So, yeah, I think I liked it then, but now I like it even more.
I definitely feel like this is a really good example of a transition episode mm-hmm. of, like, getting things really kicked off,
yeah,
I think. All right. So let's dive into the recap then.
Yes.
You have a very interesting way of taking notes.
I'm great at taking notes,
okay?
So basically we start with the gladiator battle, right?
In the arena.
Kane and everybody else there have committed crimes against one crew, and against their code of strength, unity, and honor. There's a lot of interesting things here. Also, you know, when they talk about how they invite death into the hall, we honor it. Just the sort of showing the almost like religion, but also like ritual and culture that's developed in these 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's very dystopian. It's very, it's interesting. So the death is the enemy. So they only allow it in this one area, I guess, is the idea.
That's the only time that it's invited.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Death may happen.
Yeah.
But they're inviting death in here.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting. I keep trying to read into the specifically strength, unity, honor.
Yeah.
And try to like discern exactly what that means. In terms of, like, how that's gone wrong?
Yeah.
Like, those three concepts?
Well, I mean, it kind of reminds me of, like, something you'd hear in, like, 1984 or something. Or even kind of in actual life when you have things like the Patriot Act or No Caliph Behind or whatever, where it's like, these sound like positive things.
Right.
But when you know the reality behind them, you know, it's...
yeah. Honor in particular feels... So it doesn't sit right with me, given what's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can see how they see it.
So then Kane fights in the arena and he wins, but he clearly feels very bad about it. The crowd isn't on his side because he comes off as weak. So Octavia says he must fight again.
Yeah.
We find out Abby stole pills and that Kane took the blame.
That was like not surprising at all.
Yeah.
But still, you know, they set it up nicely.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can't complain.
So, I mean, here's the thing. I think part of the issue is... When you come in, when I come in not really personally liking Abby, making her a drug addict makes it even harder for me.
I had a feeling you were going to say that. I can see that, because it's not like a positive character trait. And if you're already not in love with the character, then...
Well, because it's not even necessarily that it's not positive. It's like that it negatively affects everybody else.
Everybody who you do like.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I totally see that. I think that it makes... I don't know how it'll play out. Yeah. We see that she still has the pill bottle hidden away.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I feel like it's very much an extension of season four Abby towards the end. And that does make me nervous, because I didn't really like season four Abby. But I'm willing to give this one a...
Well, so here's the thing. I think... I want to be clear. I think her getting to this stage character-wise and motivation-wise makes sense. She thinks she started taking the pills because of the, you know, brain issue with Allie and the chip. So in some ways, maybe you could say it's a commentary on like, oh, we give people like back meds and then they
prescription drugs and then they spiral.
And then also the idea that she thinks Clark is dead, she'll never see Clark again. And also just the situation that they're in. Like, it makes sense that some people would crack, right?
Yeah.
So like, I understand that. On the flip side, it's like on a show like this, it's hard not to be like pissed off at weak people, because I'm like, everybody else is struggling and they're not taking pills and putting everybody else in harm and putting people in harm's way,
right?
And like, so I'm like, she was so weak last year too, where she would just make all these bad decisions in order to protect the people she cared about,
right?
And I'm just like, it's hard to not be frustrated with that.
I very much feel like, especially seeing this, I feel like she is the flip side of Clark.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they're very similar, but I don't know. I just very much see their mother-daughter bond in a lot of ways. Yeah. And I very much see how Clark is her daughter.
Yeah.
But Abby really is cracking, whereas Clark has, because she's had to start from such a young age with this and these decisions. So she's like what Abby could have been Clark had it started earlier kind of thing.
And I mean, I want to be clear. I'm not saying, hey, if you in real life, if you're getting an addiction or something, you're weak.
Right.
It's just like that does sound more negative than I want to be saying.
Yeah.
I'm just saying on a TV show, like
where the stakes are so high, where it's life or death, and it's like the other characters you like at stake, and they're making this very much like a plot device.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know what it reminds me of is the trope that people always talk about with stuff like on Breaking Bad, where you have Skyler.
I was just thinking that of like, it's the woman, usually female character, who is arguably doing the right thing, but...
Yeah.
Or is very sympathetic
objectively
in reality, but is standing in the way of our protagonist.
Yeah, standing in the way of everybody else who, you know...
Doing interesting.
Yeah, and so, like, yes, okay, like, is Abby's reaction in real life probably the most realistic reaction? Probably. But as a character, she's standing in the way of all this stuff.
And she's literally forcing Kane to, like, sacrifice himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I was thinking that. I was trying to figure out a way of...
But on the flip side, I will say Paige's performance is so amazing that it makes it hard for me to be annoyed about it.
Yeah. Oh, that was... Yeah. But that's the thing. That's what humanizes it, truly.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Bellamy is talking about his deal. You help open the bunker, and then we split the valley down the middle, saying... And then Dio's is, like, threatening to kill 200 of my people is one hell of a way to start a friendship. So as I said on Twitter, I felt like such a moron for not knowing that the miners would open up the cave-in.
Oh my God. I thought that was so obvious. I'm sorry.
In my mind, I was so set on the idea that the bunker people would get out on their own, and that it would be like a side thing. Like, you know, like we'd be dealing with, you know, Allegis, and then out of nowhere, the bunker people would just appear or something.
I entertained that for a while, but I think after we saw them blowing up the rocks on Clark's Ridge last week, I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, you had the normal reaction.
Yeah.
What's up next?
Bellamy and Clark are reunited in a sultry-ass way. I'm quoting you directly. These are not my words.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think they clearly... There's a reason she took off her jacket.
Let's not go back into the well of Clark's wardrobe.
But yeah, so it's a big, big part two of the reunion.
Are we supposed to assume that at the end, after he showed up last week, Clark is like dragged away
passes
out, and that's why she's not sure that she even actually saw Bellamy or something like that?
Well, I don't know if it's that she's not even sure. It's just like she's still taking it in, I think, is the idea.
Yeah.
But I mean, you could read it whatever way you want.
I didn't love that transition for the excuse of them having this, like one-on-one. I don't know.
I think it's worth it for the one-on-one. Okay. And my personal feeling, so I think this is a good scene. I think they both acted it well. I'm sure a lot of people were happy about how sultry it was.
Oh, I saw a lot of people being happy.
and I think that it made sense. It's interesting because even though I'm not like a super Bellark shipper, I feel like I am heading that direction more.
Yeah.
And I, to be clear, also in season one, I was like super hardcore about it. I actually feel like we should have gotten more. I think that for one thing, like realistically, I think he would have kissed him in that scene.
I feel like that's the thing in my mind. I'm like, I feel like I know what Clark is feeling.
Yeah.
I have a harder time knowing what Bellamy is feeling in terms of like romance.
Yeah.
Or I think like it's romantic love. Clear, well, no, I don't know. I just, yeah.
The echo is the sticking point.
Yeah. It's like making me see why they're not fast forwarding it too much.
Yeah.
But in my mind, I'm like, I see this going in a very obvious direction. So what?
But you know, beyond even just the kiss, I guess I wish that we had the time to sit in their reunion a little bit more, just in that I want them to have more of a talk. Like, they basically just got the very beginnings of, oh, people are alive out. And I would have liked to sit in their relationship a little bit longer before everything went to hell.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because if you're paying attention to interviews and stuff, they went, you know, they made a big deal out of, this is the first time you'll see Bellamy and Clark interacting when there isn't a threat. And I'm like, yeah, okay, for like 5 seconds.
Kind of. They're literally in the spaceship of the people threatening them. It's just that they're threatening them back.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So
Clark asks about who else survived, asks about, you know, our sky crew people. And Bellamy also says, like, and here are the grounders that are still alive, too. Yeah. So Amori and Echo.
Yeah, I just thought that was pretty purposeful that he's the one who said Echo and Amori, that like Clark still doesn't necessarily think about them as like family.
Well,
but Bellamy
really does.
She didn't spend
the 6 years with them, so I agree that that was purposeful.
Yeah.
And in the cut they used, they forgot to mention Harper.
Yeah.
Oops. We love you, Harper. We remember you.
So we have Raven and Murphy back up on the ship. Raven found info about Dioza. She was a Navy SEAL turned terrorist from the United Liberation Army.
So they planted bombs and caused assassinations. And it looked like the article, I think it said 2041.
Yeah.
So
I mean, this is totally
heading towards
in line,
the dystopian future.
Yeah, totally in line with, I think, what we were saying on the last podcast of it seemed like maybe, like, to maybe the government, she's a terrorist, but to her, she's like a freedom fighter or, you know, resistance or something like that.
Right. I want to jump a little forward just in mentioning of like, oh, she's a terrorist. And then when we have like McCreary and Dioza and Shaw together, McCreary says like, we're negotiating with terrorists. It's like hypocrisy all around. But that's because I don't know if she's like, she doesn't see herself as a terrorist.
Well, and they actually do bring it up. They say she's on the other foot.
Yeah. So jumping back again.
So they get a radio from Bellamy. He explains the whole deal and he goes, oh, also, this is an open line. So they're hearing it too. We get probably one of the funniest lines on all of the 100 with Murphy saying, nice to meet you. We're not bad people.
And the fact that that's coming from Murphy, I mean, yes, it's for his survival, but like, Murphy, let's talk a little bit. Objectively bad people. You used to be among them. Like, in another life, you would have turned into McCreary.
Okay, so then Clark talks to Raven and Murphy. They find out that he's alive. It's a really nice scene, and especially of Raven thanking Clark, which is really great.
I just always think of them kind of as, like, half-sisters at this point.
I really hope we get to see them, like, in the same scene a little bit more.
Yeah, I really want them together.
Yeah, I mean, they're the closest thing we really have to like a strong female friendship on the show.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was my whole thing last season. I think I was like, team strong female friendship between Raven and Clark. And I feel like sometimes we never actually fully got there because they would focus on Raven and Murphy a lot more. So I still feel like there's room for that. I don't know if both of them will make it out of this season.
They better.
I hope so.
I will riot.
I'll join you. It just makes me nervous.
So Dioza says there's a doc in the bunker. Clark's mother, take her. Well, take her, kill the hostage taker and his girlfriend, which the whole fandom went, oh, my.
Especially since she says Clark's mother in one sentence, and then the next one, like, the hostage taker and his girlfriend. It's like you're still referring to the same girl.
Okay. Then we'll go home and find a cure. So that's their whole plan. So this, to me, is the worst part of the episode, is her saying that they know about Clark's mom being a doctor. And I'm just like, oh, this seems like a weird piece of jumped logic.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, okay, so we didn't see the entire time of Clark and Bellamy talking to Dioza, but, like, I don't know. In the last episode, as far as I remember, all she got was, you know, as far as talking about the history, was being like, oh, they thought it was China, but it was a robot.
Well, I mean, but that is kind of, you could argue that that's fast forward of like, who are you? How did, you know, where are you from? I feel like we just kind of have to let it go and
I mean,
just take it.
The only argument I can see is them being, her being like, you need my mom. She's a doctor. You don't have a doctor. She can help fix blah, blah, blah. But it's just,
I don't think that that was it so much.
Yeah, it's such a specific thing. Like, even if you mention your mom, why are you mentioning she's a doctor?
Right.
It, I don't know. It feels a little silly.
Yeah.
But
all right. So then we go.
It just seems like a contrivance in order to move the plot.
I agree. I feel like this entire exchange, I'm not really, like, this chunk of dialogue felt very forced.
Then we cut back to the bunker, and we have
another grounder anthem.
Yeah. And I saw Jessica Harmon said, like, oh, that's Nyla singing. And I don't know if that was, like, a joke. But it's interesting just because it's like, where is Nyla?
Yeah, I don't like that we haven't seen her.
Well, the question is she dead?
Huh, that would suck.
Yeah, but
has been on iZombie more.
Yeah.
So I don't know how quickly, like, how concurrently they film.
Yeah.
So Octavia comes in to see Kane, who, you know, is dejectedly sitting there wanting, you know, depressed, as we've seen him, and she wants to know who actually took the meds. She doesn't believe it was him. You kept us together. We could have torn ourselves apart during the dark year.
That's what Kane says to her.
Okay, God, your notes make no sense.
They
to
make
me.
Sense to me.
Yeah.
So they're trying. Basically, just the important thing here is they bring up the dark year.
Yes.
And it's interesting. I mean, I guess I want to know what happened during the dark year. It's a little bit too much, in my opinion.
Between Blood Reyna, the Red Queen, and the dark year.
Yeah, it's just a little cheesy.
It's just a little heavy-handed for dystopia. But I can understand that. I mean, later we see they went from 1,200 to 800 approximately people. That tracks that they were only supposed to be there 5 years. It's been six. Something bad happened.
And I assume you're not supposed to read it as all 400 people died in the fighting pit. I hope that's not.
maybe a few hundred, but not all 400.
So Kane thinks Octavia has lost her way. We have a chance to do better than the Ark, and we're throwing it away. Strength without mercy is nothing. You can save us. It's not too late. But she's like, fuck that. You're going to die, bitch.
He also brings up the fact that, like, we floated your mother and that, you know, that's how it transitions here. And it just makes me think about how Jaha also brought that up to her. And what Jaha told her is what kind of put her on this path.
Yeah.
But it feels like it got, you know, things got more skewed as things went on. And they were just kind of like, okay, well, we're surviving. And then and that's where things, like, continued to spiral out of control.
Well, I'm trying to find what Kane said. Yeah, he says, justice became vengeance, vengeance became sport. That's what he says later when he's in the arena again. Mm. And, yeah, I mean, it makes sense that we started with justice and we got to this really messed up
You're thing. Honoring death. You're inviting it. But honestly, if you're the fact that he won and people still turned against him for showing weakness, like, that doesn't feel very honorable in
well,
a way.
Well, it's all about, it's interesting because it to me is all about death is the enemy, so you can't show weakness because that's going to lead to, it's going to hurt, that's going to hurt the group, right? You can't have any weak links in your group.
Yeah. So that goes back to the strength piece of it.
But I also think it's interesting because it kind of in some ways went from, you know, death being the enemy to worshiping death. And it's kind of a mixed message.
It is a mixed message, which is why Octavia feels like she can reason it. But Kane's like, you've deluded yourself. You've deluded us all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Indra brings Kane to Abby. She talks about how she maxed him to a weaker opponent this time, but he says he won't fight at all, so that's not good. Abby confesses, and Andrew's like, you were right to have her locked up. The only way to save you both is to have Kane win.
I absolutely love the Indra-Kane friendship continuing in this way.
Yeah.
She's sad, but she's doing what she can for him.
I think that it's fantastic how much they're bonded together.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Kane says he can't do it anymore.
We've done what we have to do to survive. It's just an excuse for the horrors we inflict on each other.
I think after Abby specifically says, like, we did what we have to do to survive, it's like, we're using that as an excuse. Yeah. That's what Clark used as an excuse for planning on murdering everybody who came down in the drop, in the drop ship here.
Yeah.
I feel like that's why they're kind of connected. And Bellamy is very much Kane's son.
So Kane makes Abby promise she won't confess and that she'll stop taking the pills.
I don't believe her promise.
Clearly, we see in like 5 seconds.
Yeah, but even then, I was like, the way she said that is the way.
But again, fantastic performance here. Great relationship building.
I love this scene.
Then back to the ship, we have Raven finding out more fun backstory. She talks about Allegis 1 was an unmanned explorer ship. It found Hydrolonium and an asteroid called Proxima 6. Allegis 2 was a failed mining mission due to the lack of manpower. 3 is encrypted.
She can't break the encryption.
And as we know, 3 is the one with the two suns thing from last week.
Yeah, that they saw the same mutation of the black blood.
So clearly that's going to play a bigger role probably in the next season is my assumption. So let's talk about Zeke versus Miles.
I don't really get it. So we're talking about Shaw, aka the good boy, on Dio's team, and I thought his name was Zeke.
Everybody thought it was Zeke.
Apparently, it's Miles for legal reasons.
So I know that sometimes there's issues with, like, if someone has the exact same name. So maybe there was someone named Zeke Shaw that, like, had an issue with it or something. Yeah. I don't know.
If
anyone can shed more light on that.
Let's just call him Shaw for the sake of
I think that's where we're going. It's going to be really hard for me not to say Zeke.
Yeah, it just rolls off the tongue very nicely.
He tries to hack in, but Raven stops him. Murphy wants to call Bellamy and be like, hey, we have to pull the plug. They can't be doing this, but Raven shuts him down.
I think that's a mistake.
Yep, we'll get back to that. Kane won't fight. We have the Justice Becomes Vengeance thing. Octavia enters the arena. Kane says saving our people is more than just keeping them alive. And then Octavia
violently disagrees.
She almost kills Kane, but Bellamy swoops down.
Yeah. That was very nice.
Yeah.
I like their moment of peaceful reunion.
Yeah. So, I mean, the one thing is this is another part of the episode. I guess I do have some issues with this episode.
Yeah.
I mean, overall, I feel like it's better than the sum of its parts.
Yeah.
And a lot of the reunion and character stuff is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very, tropic thing to be like, he's gonna kill him, and then out of nowhere her brother swoops in.
I think I mentioned this on Twitter, but my mom, who's seen only like 50% of recent seasons of The 100 and just like missed several seasons in the middle, we were watching it together and she's like, so the people with the blast, like, they're gonna come in when she's gonna try to kill him, right? And I was like, yes. you're right. Good call, Mom.
I mean, I suppose it still works as a character moment to show where Octavia is at this point. Yeah,
absolutely. I appreciate that. I mean, it's not just to be cheesy. It's for that purpose.
So we get the reunion. We get Clark reuniting with Octavia, too.
Oh, my God. Clark's face dropping down into the arena was like, what the fuck am I stepping into?
Octavia!
And they don't hug. That is important. They do the arm clasp thing. Yeah. And that's when Bellamy looks around. It's like, so, you've redecorated. Love the skull throne.
Yep. So, Shaw tells Dioza that Raven is really good. And he finds Raven cute when she does the Raven thingy.
You mean, she said, she flipped me the bird, and then you see her insignia flash across the screen. Yeah. Like, that was cute. A little too cute, but cute.
No, but she's done that before,
too. I know, but that...
The flipping the bird
Flipping thing. The bird, and then that popping up, it's like...
What do you think about... So, people, like, instantaneously ship the fuck out of Shaw and Raven.
That was gonna happen. Like, they knew that would happen. Like, this show has to know about... shipping culture related to it. It's hyper aware of it at this point.
I guess my question to you is how do you feel about the idea of that? And also, that people, I mean, that versus the fact that this episode is very Graven Murphy heavy, do you think that maybe we were wrong? Maybe the reason they cut the thing out last week was because they decided, you know what, we'll keep Raven and Murphy as like a great platonic friendship, and well, maybe she has chemistry with Shaw, maybe they did readings or something together, and they're like, you know what, let's not create another love triangle, let's...
I'm not so certain that they're not creating another... I'm not ready to toss the baby out with the bathwater just because they cut that kiss and that they're doing this. I think that they might still be heading towards love triangle territory, or quadrangle.
Exactly, at that point it's quadrangle.
With Imori, so I'm not ready to say anything either way.
I'm interested. I mean, again, obviously, I hope I don't exactly want quadrangles, but it does to a certain degree interest me in the fact that it felt like last episode we were saying there was like romantic-y music and stuff going on with Shaw and Clark. So in some ways, I feel like they were like, well, he's attractive, he's gonna end up with someone, let's see what we want to do with him. And maybe that is where they landed, is him and Raven, and they won't do the Murphy thing. In some ways, I'm like, okay, I guess that would be good because we wouldn't have the quadrangle, and obviously we don't want to, like, you know, upset Imori and stuff like that, and break up female friendships and things like that. On the other hand, I like Murphy and Raven.
I do too.
But Shaw's good too. I like Shaw. Speaking of Murphy and Raven, Murphy talks to her. He's like, I know how hard this is. Raven apologizes for being so mean to him. She's afraid she can't pull the plug. Murphy says he'll do it. He thought he was staying up here to impress Imori, but he goes, like, why do you think you always have to be the one to sacrifice?
That's like the thing that makes me think that they're still Murphy. I'm not saying I do. I'm just saying that's a point in that direction, but it was a very noble thing for him to do, offer to commit genocide.
So nice of him. There we go back to Abby
sneaks the pills,
sneaking the pills, and then she reunites with
Indra. Totally saw that,
probably.
She's not like, impressed,
Abby. But she reunites with Clark, which is really nice. And they're talking about how they need to get Kane to the ground, and Indra is going to help them out with that. Mm-hmm. Octavia is the first on the ground again, very reminiscent of the pilot, which is nice.
Thank God there was no, we're back, bitches.
I still think she
this Octavia would not do that, okay?
But, like, obviously.
No.
Obviously not in the way she did, but again, I feel like, to some degree, it would be funny.
Not meant to be funny.
No, but like if she like made fun of it to herself, you know, like if she smirked, like she like whispered it to herself and smirked.
I want that line to be dead forever, dead and buried.
Whatever. The best part of this, and I actually think the best part of the whole like grounder fanaticism this episode is From the Ashes We Will Rise being chanted.
Oh, yeah. That was.
Yeah. Whew. You know what it reminded me of is Dark Knight Rises.
Hmm.
You know, like there's like the whole chant as he's climbing up the thing. Yeah. So Bellamy notices from Miller that they have weapons, and the deal was no weapons, and Huxley was like, not my deal.
That was such a badass line, though.
So then they talk in this dining room.
Was that the old cafe place? Cafe. Sorry, cafe Grounder Grounder Cafe. Like, the old, like, Grounder meeting room where...
I think
where,
it was, like, where Octavia killed that guy.
Yeah, during the, like, anti-technology thing. Yeah, so that, I think we're talking about the same place.
Yeah, but it's kind of ridiculous that it's as nice looking
I know,
as
it's just covered in dust.
It shouldn't even exist.
I agree.
But whatever, they had the that
set. The fact that later we see Dioza and McCreary standing on like the second floor of a building, I'm like, don't climb any of the structures, they are not sound.
Like the fountain shouldn't exist either.
I know. You're sorry to ruin your nice fountain. It's like the fact that there was any nice fountain to ruin, even if it was dried up, is bullshit. But okay.
So Octavia's saying she doesn't. Oh, he also the great line of looks like someone read Ovid a few too many times.
I love that.
That was really funny.
Thank Nyla.
Octavia says, I don't trust these people, but Bellamy says to trust me, we have leverage.
For now.
We talked about Kane and Abby being the last one out of the bunker and what that means. Then we go to Dioza being like, well, if we can't, you know, hack our way in, why don't you open the doors and we'll kill Raven and Murphy and our people will be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Smart lady.
Smart evil lady.
Yeah. Cut back to soccer, which I thought was really cute. And he talks to, he calls Raven the monstrously hideous one-legged goalie, which is pretty great. Very Murphy. So they start hearing that, you know, obviously that the doors are opening, that they're trying to kill them, and they go, time to pull the plug. But Murphy's like, I'm not ready to die, are you?
Yeah.
So instead, they wake everybody up.
Dun, dun, dun.
So that way, Dio's hand is forced. They have to close the doors.
But they lost their leverage.
Yeah. So Dioza goes, your friend is smart, Shaw, but she's a coward. And Shaw's like, an alive coward.
They're friends already.
Yeah. Cut to Cybanks. Everyone's
Cybanks.
Cybanks.
I don't know how to pronounce this. Cybanks. I don't actually remember his name being said.
It probably was said like once.
Yeah.
The weirdo
with the face tats
causes problems.
Yeah.
He talks to McCreary. He's like, we're more loyal to you than we are to Dioza. And you know, McCreary's like, the time for mutiny will come. Just don't be stupid.
prisoners of violent criminals aren't necessarily always known for being brilliant.
Yeah. As I tweeted a few weeks ago or days ago, or whatever, I'm still of the opinion that Dioza will eventually kill McCreary.
Yeah, I think it would be kind of a ripoff. I suppose the only other person who I could see it going well killing McCreary, like I might not dislike it, is Shaw.
To me, that's like overly telegraphed, and Dioza doing that to me would show more character development than Shaw, who clearly always had an issue with McCreary.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would show more that Dioza has a line that she won't cross, kind of thing, by murdering someone.
That's fair. I do think that Shaw will end up murdering someone by the end of the season.
Yeah. So the deal's off, and Dioza wants the doctor. So Abby chooses to go with them to protect Kane.
Octavia calls them traitors, but
I actually did like this because it was like, Abby's like, hey, if you're gonna like fucking kill my boyfriend, I'm gonna just leave you.
Yeah.
It makes sense rather than being stuck in the desert.
Right. It's their chance at survival.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you could say it's lacking honor, but Octavia's honor, so to speak, has gotten a lot of people killed and traumatized too. So
the thing that's interesting here that I saw a lot of people sort of making fun of is the idea of Abby being their only doctor. And it's
they
like,
totally forgot about Jackson.
Well, so Jackson was supposed to be like a trainee, but like in the last 6 years, plus like the whole reality of the show, it's like he still isn't a full doctor. Also, why hasn't Abby spent any of that time training any other doctors?
She's been too busy being a drug addict, I suppose. It really is stupid.
Yeah.
I really think that's dumb.
Yeah, I mean, and that's something that's gone on for a while where, like, in season one, they're like, you killed our healer. And it's like, why do you have one healer? So Dioza takes Abby and Kane. She says, the valley is ours. As long as you stay here, we won't have a problem.
As long as you stay here and die because it's a desert.
Yeah, what? I don't know.
Whatever. It's just meant to be a very menacing, villainous line.
Yeah. So Raven and Murphy, she's keeping his insurance. Then Cybanks messes up everything with his mining blaster gun. And if we have a name for that, let me know, guys.
I just call it the blaster.
Yeah. And then he pulverizes someone into...
So I'm pretty sure, I'm not 100% sure, I tried to pay more attention on rewatch. I think it's the guy who was in the fighting ring with Kane a second time.
Really?
I think he's the one who dove in front of... I thought
it was just a rando, but...
I thought they were showing him on the front lines behind Octavia, and then all of a sudden I didn't see him again. I could be totally wrong, but I feel like that was him. Of even he, who was a criminal, he like died proving himself.
Interesting, yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
That would be cool, yeah.
Yeah, I think, because he even went down on one knee when Octavia jumped into the ring. Good point,
To me, that was, though, like, I don't want to be murdered by her.
I mean,
I think the effects and the visuals of the pulverizing blaster thingy were actually really well done.
Yeah.
I was really impressed.
I've been impressed with the CGI this season.
Yeah, especially because, I mean, they have to not even have that much money, but.
Yeah.
So then I thought we immediately go to, okay, it's war time.
It's war. Drop the missiles.
Yeah.
So, Shaw, send him in. One in the crowd, one in the bunker.
Yeah. So Shaw's like, hey, I think there are only 1,500 people in the entire human race. Are you sure we should use asteroid blasting missiles right now? And she's like,
Do it.
And he's like, oh no, Raven jammed my signal.
I think that was... I mean, he tried to be convincing, but I don't think Raven knew that. And I think that was him putting in the wrong launch codes.
Yeah.
That's how I read it immediately.
Yeah, he's trying to buy time.
Yeah, which is why he's like, okay, but I'm being a good boy, so let's go to space.
Yeah. So that'll be interesting. I did not expect... One thing I will say is, A, I did not expect the pods to be opened this quickly. Mm-hmm. B, I did not expect Raven and Murphy to not to only be alone for one episode.
Yeah, considering they set it up, we're up here to die. But then he's quickly saying, well, I'm not ready. That's when, so after all this, this is when McCreary kills his mutineer.
Yeah, Sybanks.
Sybanks.
And then Octavia goes back to being annoying. She's all pissed at Bill. She goes, I trusted you. This is your fault. Now we have to go to war. Blah, 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 blah.
That's exactly how she says it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she's still reeling from being near blasted, but...
I guess, does it have to be that he's mad at Bellamy?
This is your fault. You got us out of the bunker where we were clearly going to die soon anyway.
Come on. It's just dumb.
He did what he could, girl.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand being like, we have to go to war and like, I'm angry, but like, be like, he could have been like, told you so or something. Like, even that I would have been more okay
with. You shouldn't have trusted them.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to go into our feedback segment here. And just so you guys know, we included only a few people's feedback this week because we're actually on a bit of a time budget. I have to go on a work trip. But if you guys want to be part of not the contact us segment, the feedback segment in the future.
Here is how you contact us. Yes,
thank you, dear. You can either tweet at us over at the100podcast. You can go to the100podcast.com and leave a comment or send us a little contact form thing there. You can email us at the100pod@gmail.com. Also, you could leave us a comment over on youtube.com/doingokay on the videos I post there. This week, I had two videos. One that was a Bell Arc reuniting video, and one was the reaction video to this episode. Also, please review us or rate us on iTunes. I want to give a big thank you to Chloe Potter 11 and MK in New York City for this week leaving us really nice reviews, and we really appreciate those.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate it. And lastly, we just want to mention that this podcast is now in partnership with TV Time. So check out the TV Time app, and I promise in next week's episode, we'll dive into what that means more.
Yes. Again, time budget. All right. I will start with Sagan from YouTube. So this episode had me all over. Oh, and Bellamy reuniting, Raven and John learning about Clark being alive, slash playing soccer, slash having fun. Abby's realization Clark was real. So much. I loved it all. Octavia needs to take it down a notch, but let's be honest. I love everything she does. 814 out of 1200. What a shock.
If she'd successfully killed Kane, it would have been 813.
Yeah. I wish we had seen some Echo reacting to Clark and Bellamy reuniting. I also wish we had seen Raven unplug one person every time Dioza tried to go back on her deal.
That would have been great.
That would have been really interesting. Let Bellamy know, then let Bellamy know, but also just do the thing that needed to be done. I agree, it's wartime. Prisoners better watch their backs. I can't believe the prisoners are going to get their crew now. It's all happening so fast. When Raven and John had opened all the cryopods, I wish they had just been like, hey, I'm Raven, this is John. We will be your shipmates. Haha, another good way to end the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your feedback.
Thanks. Good points. Yeah. All right, so this next one is from Alexa Q-Link, this sent into us to our email.
Yeah. I want to throw out, when I saw an email from Alexa Q-Link, I thought it was like a weird Amazon like spam email.
Well, fortunately, it was legitimate feedback. All right, so Alexa says, I can't help but be incredibly frustrated with how the pull the plug threat worked out. Raven stayed behind knowing she'd probably die specifically so Space Crew could maintain the leverage that they'd kill all the sleeping giants if Dioza and the Legis crew didn't make the deal. Then Shaw immediately starts trying to hack back into the ship in direct defiance of their agreement, and Raven doesn't say anything. I understand she was afraid to commit another genocide, but come on. How can the solution be to just say nothing? Allegis knows they're breaking the deal by hacking. They know you know they're trying to break the deal. And the fact that clearly Bellamy doesn't know shows Dioza that they weren't planning on going through with the threat. So what the hell was the point of Raven staying behind to die? And then they try to literally blast them into space and kill them, and Murphy can't even go through with it. The solution was to wake them all up. How does that help anybody? Murphy says, I'm not ready to die, are you? Well, you being willing to die to kill them was kind of the entire point of you staying in space. So I guess the threat at least worked long enough for the Allegis crew to help free Bunker crew, so that's not nothing. But geez, they make this massive, we'll kill 200 of your people threat and back off at the first show of force. Very frustrating. Anyway, love the pod. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this. This is a great point.
I love this email. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really understandable that you'd have an issue with it. And I don't know. At the end of the day, I do think it's in character for both characters. Mm-hmm. I was thinking the other day, as far as I remember, like, Raven is the least murdery of anyone, like, any of our main characters.
Yeah.
Maybe Abby. But, like, mm-hmm. yeah, like, Raven is not someone who's done anything like this before.
Right.
Unless I'm forgetting something.
She's, like, talked about how other people's actions would result in things. But she's been pretty bloodless, I think, overall.
I think she was trying to be a little more cutthroat last season.
Yeah. If we're wrong about that, let us know.
But I think that, you know, he went up hoping that he could do it, and she knew he was the only one who would be able to do it,
mm-hmm.
And she didn't want to have anybody else have to die with her. So I think that's the idea. And then Murphy, he's the cockroach. Like, he'll do anything to stay alive. He was willing to pull the plug when his life wasn't on the line.
Right.
But
now it could be, it's survival.
But at the same time, I understand being frustrated because, it's like, again, the whole idea of weak people in this world are really annoying. It's like, hey,
have the strength to follow through.
Otherwise, you're totally fucking everybody.
Honestly, I think that the weakest point of this is it feels very arbitrary that Raven decided not to tell Bellamy any of this. I feel like that doesn't really make sense to me.
The only argument I would have is that she thought, oh, Bellamy will tell me to pull the plug and I can't do it.
I don't think that would be it, because then Bellamy would lose his leverage. I think Bellamy, that would be nice if Bellamy's like, kill one every time they do that.
I think that was a good
That
idea.
Would have been a better Bellamy line. I'm with you. That's a great suggestion. All right, I'm going to take this one.
Yep.
This is from Inga on our website.
Yeah, she left the comments.
I have the really bad feeling that either Murphy or Raven might end up needing the cure Abby is supposed to develop, since they are now exposed to all those people on Allegis who may have whatever needs curing.
Yep.
Yes.
Or even that Dioza would purposely expose them so that Abby had motivation
to cure her own. But I really hope I'm wrong. Murphy was a bioweapon once before, and Raven surely has been through enough physical harm, right?
Yeah, good point.
Well, everyone suffers. Yeah.
That should be the tagline of the show.
Next season. Since everyone in the bunker keeps talking about Octavia's mother and that her crime was having her, how exactly did they handle the whole having children thing in the bunker? I mean, then again, we still know very little about the way the Sky People contraceptive implants work. Mm. Do both genders have them? Because if only women do, how did that work out for Murphy and Amori? And Octavia wouldn't have had one as an illegal child, right? Did she get one when she was caught? Why would they waste the resources on someone in a prison cell or someone they are sending to the ground to die?
They did. I think that Jackson, he was taking some out for people, but he could easily also added some in when they were in Arcadia.
Yeah, and also if Octavia's been with Nyla, I don't think they need the contraceptive implants unless we've evolved a certain way. If all the bunker people and all the Allegis people really want to live together in Eden, it will be really crowded. I mean, altogether, there are about 1,200 people. If I'm not wrong, that's not a lot, but Eden is not that big. Even if they all would get along, that would be a problem. I don't know if we know that for sure.
I'm unclear on how big Eden's supposed to be, but only one village, so.
Yeah. I'm really glad Kane told Octavia that what she was doing with the fighting pit was far from justice, and that Bellamy instantly recognized where she got the idea from. Yeah, I mean, he's the one who told her all those stories. And no, I definitely didn't have to rewind because of the fighting scenes, because I was comparing the weapons they used to the typology charts from my archaeology textbook.
Oh, cool.
Not at all. They look really cool and seem realistic based on how blades used to be fixated to handles and how that would change with the materials they have.
Cool.
I'm a little disappointed that they completely ignored Maddie, Monty, Harper, Amori, and Echo this episode. But generally, I really like the episode. I love Raven and Murphy stuff, and Raven sending Shaw that bird was amazing. All these reunions were really heartwarming, even if the Blake siblings went back to being at odds 5 seconds later. When was the last time they got along for more than 2 minutes? Season two, maybe? I think the title Pandora's Box can reference both the opening of the bunker and the opening of the pods.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if opening the pods release the illness or virus that the Legis people seem to have a problem with.
Yep.
I feel like it's a parasite.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really looking forward to hearing your thoughts about the episode. The podcast will be great to pass at least part of the annoyingly long train ride I have to do.
Well, I'm sorry that you might have missed having us.
Maybe your Monday train ride.
Yeah. Well, a lot of great thoughts there. So thank you for that. One thing we haven't really talked about that I think two different feedback segments have mentioned were the lack of echo in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how I feel, because on the one hand, I'm like, I kind of am glad we had the Clark Bellamy reunion without having to have like shots of Echo being like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, yeah, it is. It's a little weird that he just like goes off and is like holding Clark. Like, yeah, it's very reminiscent of season 3 where he's with Gina and then he goes after Ronan
Clark at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we'll see. Love triangles here. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
I'm just happy that I'm actually excited to see more Maddie next week.
Yeah. Team Maddie.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Thank you guys so much for listening and for all the great feedback. We will be back at you next week, and may we meet again.
May we meet again.